Welcome again, my friends, to the Ask Beanie Show, and happy, happy, happy May. In New York City today, the sky is blue, the flowers are blooming, people are walking around with their dogs. In fact, I was out on the tennis courts this morning at 9 o'clock, and it was actually a wonderful, wonderful way to start the day. Joggers were jogging on the Hudson River, and I'm hoping that you too are having a really, really nice Monday. Well, I'm, as you know, a psychotherapist and a sex therapist and the author of the groundbreaking book on relationships. And I keep saying this all the time because I'm actually planning to update my book. And, you know, I find myself, you know, going through the material that I wrote so many years ago. And really wish that I had been fortunate enough to have this book when I was beginning my own dating and relationship life. And of course, as you probably know, if you've been listening to the Ask Beanie Show for the past 10 years, and I can hardly believe that it actually is 10 years, that I did research with 450 people in the Boston, Providence, and Connecticut areas, and I actually developed a 10-step formula, and people who know me know that I am very, very bottom line. No psychobabble. If it works, let's get on with the show. If it doesn't, let's not waste our time talking about things that really don't work in the real world. So what this formula does, it actually teaches us how to assess. Yes, I know the word assessment, it is not romantic, it is not sexy, but the reality is that we assess every single thing in our lives, and why not our relationships? In fact, probably the most important thing that we should be assessing in our lives is who we will allow, into our lives, and not just into our romantic lives. And, you know, I say this all the time, is that we have to be very, very careful who we allow into our personal, and not just into our personal, but also our professional lives as well. So this formula, this 10-step formula, it teaches all of us how to assess, how to very accurately assess who's right for you and who's wrong for you before committing to any serious relationship. You know, over the weekend, I happened to be watching, just sort of tuning in to some of the matchmaking shows on Netflix. So there were Jewish matchmaking shows and Indian matchmaking shows. And, you know, what was so, so clear to me is that the real, real foundation of what we need to be thinking about if we want to have a long-lasting, healthy relationship with anyone are things that are really not talked about in these shows. They were talking about physicality, and of course, sexuality and connection are very important, but it mostly had to do with interests and things that were pretty superficial. So if you read my book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love, it's going to feel like you have me. That may be a good thing, or for some, it may not be a good thing, in your wallet or in your purse, guiding you through all of the different things that we actually have to look for when we are making a really in-depth assessment about who this person is and who this person is not that we are thinking about having in our lives. Because let's look at the actual statistics, okay? Every single day, 4 women die in the United States as a result of domestic violence. And I have been citing the statistic year in and year out. So again, despite all of the self-help books and therapists and relationship coaches, we are not seeing any positive changes. In fact, we are seeing a reversal. Every year, approximately 132,000 women report that they have been victims of rape or attempted rape. Every year, 1.2 million women are forcibly raped by their current or former male partner. Dating abuse is at an all-time high. And if we're looking at the divorce rate for first marriages, it's still 48%. 67% of second marriages fail. And 73% of couples, and people are always really, really surprised about this statistic, find themselves in front of a judge in a divorce court. 30% of college co-eds are talking about being in abusive relationships of various different kinds. So again, you know, we're talking self-help, we're talking about all the shows on television and also on the radio and on the internet that are dealing with relationships. There are more new self-help books that are being published every year. In fact, in going through some of the latest review of the self-help book literature, it's really amazing. And that one would really hope with all of the educational material out there that we would start to see some positive changes when it comes to our relationships, and that is simply not happening. But I am very clear. I am very, very clear what the problems are, and much, much more importantly, what we actually need to do to reverse this very, very depressing and upsetting trend. So let's be really clear. And again, I would absolutely love to have some dialogue with you. The number here on the Progressive Radio Network is 888-874-4888. So if you have comments or questions or you want to discuss or debate, I would absolutely love to have a dialogue with you. So again, let's be really clear about this. Relationships fail. And this is my experience as a practicing psychotherapist and sex therapist for over 35 years. And every single week when I say that, 35 years that I've been practicing as a psychotherapist, it's amazing where the time has gone. And yet I have to say, of all of the different things that I do, my writing, I'm the advice columnist for dance papers in the Hamptons and in Palm Beach, and I'm an expert guest on national radio and television. I would say of all the things that I really love to do, it is seeing patients in my private practice here in New York City and also in East Hampton. So if you want to take some notes right now, I think it would be a really good idea. Okay. Relationships fail for four reasons. Number one, if each of us is not emotionally and psychologically and psychiatrically in a reasonably good place, nobody feels terrific all the time, we all have ups and downs in our lives, it is not possible to be able to find and maintain a healthy relationship with anyone. And as I used to tell my daughter when she was a lot younger, that the relationship needs to be the icing on the cake. We need to be the cake. So what does that mean? It means that we need as best as we possibly can to deal with the depression and the anxiety and the post-traumatic stress disorder and the substance abuse issues that have affected us and that will always affect us if we are not willing to acknowledge and address and resolve as best as we can these kinds of problems. We need to be open and willing and serious to deal with the early child sexual abuse. We also need to be serious to really try to work through, again, as best as we possibly can, what did and did not happen in our families of origin growing up. And this is a process. And people say, well, this is going to take forever. No, it's not going to take forever. But again, to be able to find a good therapist who you can emotionally process and go through things from the beginning to the present. And again, to be able as best as we can, because we are not going to be able to change our history. We cannot change anything that's happened a second ago. But we do need to visit and revisit traumas and the things that continue to get in the way of our life. And putting a bandage on top of the wounds is not going to do the trick. So that if you are finding that your depression and anxiety and your post-traumatic stress disorder issues are really hampering you in your day-to-day life, trust me, even though you may hope and believe that somebody is going to be able to rescue you, we still need to do our own individual work. And I know that finding therapists is really difficult, and with the insurance, the mental health insurance, or really lack of insurance benefits that so many millions of Americans really don't have. And I know that it is very, very difficult. I was reading an article just a couple of days ago that people who were in the emergency department at hospitals for mental health reasons, I mean, they waited hours and hours, and then many reported that there was zero follow-up as a result of their attempting to get some help. So again, we need to be okay. We need to be the cake, and the relationship needs to be the icing on the cake. Number two, and I say this respectfully, and I've been saying this for many, many years. I mean, my first book came out in 1998, and one would really have hoped that over all of these years that we would have seen a positive upturn. Again, all these relationship books and coaches and therapists and shows, and yet that is not the reality statistically at all, what we are seeing. So number two, the majority of people have no idea whatsoever about what ingredients actually go into a healthy relationship. We need to know what goes into the mixture. And yes, courses and reading books, communication and problem solving, and knowing the difference between intimacy and emotional intimacy and sex. I mean, you can have great emotional intimacy, caring and sharing and love and support, and yet not have those chemical vibes that we all want in our relationships. But on the other hand, you can have great sex with somebody and have very little, if any, real emotional intimacy kinds of connection. So yes, it's true. We need to commit to becoming students of relationship education, because the fact is that if we don't know the ingredients, and if we're not in a relatively good place ourselves, emotionally and psychiatrically and psychologically, we are not going to be able to assess who's right or wrong for you at all. And of course, again, the statistics show that we are doing a very, very, very poor job. And then if you look at our culture, and again, I've been looking at some of these relationship television reality shows. Look at shows like The Bachelor, The Bachelorette, or The Housewives of New York, or Beverly Hills, and people look beautiful and coiffed, and it's all very glamorous. Or even look at the Lifetime movies. The fact is that Functional relationships, they are glamorized. We can't get enough of looking and talking about dysfunctional relationships in the media. And for example, the endless talk about Angelina and Brad and their divorce and their custody and their kids and poor Jennifer Aniston's relationship heartbreaks. And it goes on and on and on. So what is the real impact of this on us? Because on the surface, these television shows can be viewed as innocent entertainment, right? You know, we're just tuning in to look at a show. However, their messages about relationships and marriage really do make a mockery of what it takes to have a healthy, long-lasting relationship. And I want to include, you know, communication and problem solving. I mean, if we don't have sufficient communication and problem solving skills, trust me, we are going to be in big trouble over the years. It is not about where are we going to go for dinner or what kind of a trip should we possibly take or what hotel should we stay at. Real life issues require real life serious emotional communication and problem solving skills. Also, and this is not our fault, you know, talk about the luck of the draw. How many people were really fortunate enough to have positive role models for parents to teach us about loving relationships? And finally, if we haven't been taught, and I think most people have not, about what ingredients go into a healthy relationship. And if we really rely on misleading portrayals of love in movies and television and popular music, how can we then expect people to be able to make healthy choices about their relationships? And the reality, of course, again, let's just look at the statistics. The reality is that we can't and we don't. But I do have good news in a couple of minutes that I am going to be sharing with you. Problem, solution. That is really the way I try to orchestrate my personal life and my professional life as well. We all have problems. We all go through ups and downs. And yet we all have a responsibility to ourselves. And if we're lucky enough to have partners, to try to figure out what we need to do to get ourselves on a more constructive path. Now, many people believe that the best way to build stronger families is to attack the barriers keeping people from achieving their full potential. And obviously, you cannot disagree with this at all, because issues like poverty and racism and sexism and structural violence and unemployment and addictions are often cited as the primary reasons for the breakdown of relationships. And although these are clearly contributing factors to marital and family strife, removing these barriers alone will not solve the problem. Yes, it will make it easier if you can afford to go for help. It'll make it a lot easier if you are able, if you happen to be married or in a partnership, to go out for dinner and hire a babysitter. There is no question about that. However, in the past 35 years, I have treated some of the wealthiest, best educated, and most successful people here in the United States and also in Canada. You know, I'm Canadian. I have dual citizenship. And I can definitively say that the relationship problems, we're talking relationship, we're not talking about financial, we're talking about the relationship problems of my rich and famous clientele are no different from the people who I have treated from the inner city areas of Montreal, of Providence, and Manhattan. Again, both groups, and looking at the groups, again, the socioeconomic issues, nobody can deny the horrible, horrible strife and problems and worries that people who are not able to pay their rent and who are not able to put food on their tables. No question about that. But both groups, again, if we're looking at relationship skills, relationship knowledge, both groups know virtually nothing about what ingredients go into a healthy relationship, and nor have they developed the emotional communication and problem-solving skills that are necessary to maintain and sustain a relationship. But I have a solution. It's not a perfect solution, but it is a good solution. We spend, as I mentioned, more time researching. We research everything in our lives, our computers, our iPads, our cell phones, our cars, our grams of fat, and real estate than we do our partners, right? We're busy, busy reading. I know that I was over the years. I would read consumer reports if I wanted to buy a car, if I wanted to buy something. And even now, if I'm looking at the best creams or makeup or lipstick, I am busy, busy reading reviews and trying to figure out what the best products might be for me. But think back to how often you thought you knew everything there was to know about your partner. You believed, or we wanted to believe, that the person you were in love with was exactly who he or she seemed to be. And you were sure, right? You were sure that you had found your life partner and perfect match. And then suddenly, without warning, you realize that you are headed for disaster. Your relationship is in shambles. Your mind is spinning. What went wrong? Chances are the signs were there all along. You know how sometimes we have those feelings and we want to ignore them, we want to put them away, we don't want to have to deal, we don't like to have conflict, we don't want to argue, we don't want to really get anything that's going to get in the way of a romantic evening. So we just either don't know, or we just make a decision that we don't want to deal. So my formula, as I mentioned, was based on my research with over 450 people. And I'll tell you the truth, that when my book first came out, everybody, my agents, the publisher, everybody was really, really excited that this was going to be a New York Times best-selling book. And I think it should have been. But it was not. I mean, the book did okay, and it still sells. And as I mentioned, I'm going to be doing a bit of an update. But what I found is that people are not really interested. They're not interested in really doing some serious work. And if they were, we would have seen some big, big statistical changes since 1998, when my book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love, first came out. But in fact, the statistics have gotten worse. I mean, when I was a child and a student growing up in Winnipeg, Canada, I'm sure there were domestic violence situations. And I was talking to somebody yesterday, and we were thinking about how many people did we know who came from divorced families when we were growing up. Now, I knew one. I had one girlfriend throughout my entire childhood in Winnipeg, Canada, who actually came from a divorced family. But let's look at actually what is going on in the world of domestic violence. Again, three women are killed every single day. One of the other statistics that I find very, very upsetting is that 1 in 10 high school students experience physical and or sexual dating violence. 1 in 10 high school students. And what about what is going on in college? Again, this number is a bomb. It really freaks me out. 43% of college co-eds allege physical or sexual abuse by their dating partner. Now, this is not 1998 statistics. This is 2022-2023 statistics. And listen to this number. Only 33% of teens who were in an abusive relationship ever told anyone about the abuse. There's shame, there's guilt. I know that young women that I have treated, they blame themselves. Maybe they looked too sexy, maybe they sounded too sexy. And of course, it had nothing to do with their looking too sexy or sounding too sexy. What it had to do with is that they were with partners, they were with people who they should not have been with when they saw the first signs before the abuse, the first signs of disrespect in any way. Those are the kinds of signs. Those are the red flags that should shake us up to our core and give us permission to be able to extricate, to be able to exit a relationship before things get really, really out of control. And what was also really interesting when looking at the statistics, and not just interesting, I mean, frankly, really upsetting, is that 81% of parents believe that teen dating violence is not an issue. So as parents, are we this disconnected from our kids, and are we this disconnected with what is going on in the world of teen dating abuse, co-ed college violence, and dating abuse as well? Females between the ages of 16 to 24 are roughly three times more likely than the rest of the population to be abused by an intimate partner. Now, these numbers, I think they're really, really important. And I think that we have an opportunity in the schools to be able to really hunker down and focus on mental health and focus on relationship education. And as I mentioned to you in previous shows, I have had the privilege to be doing some consulting at East Hampton High School in East Hampton, New York. And my partner in crime, James Stewart, has been a teacher at East Hampton High School for 44 years. And his mantra, his raison d'etre, has been to really teach and help the students to focus on mental health, on domestic violence, on healthy relationships. And I was having a conversation today with someone in these kinds of conversations. Obviously, they need to be age appropriate. They need to begin, I believe, at the elementary school level. Just think, we see students, we see these kids in the schools probably more than anyone does, probably more. We have their undivided attention, or we hope that we have their undivided attention more than their parents do. And as I see it, and this is something that I have proposed, this is something that I have pitched for years and years, not that we're going to be turning our schools into mental health clinics, but that we have the money, we have the knowledge, we have the population, we have the school environment where we have an incredible opportunity to be able to identify students that are at risk for, whether we're talking about suicide or depression or other kinds of emotional, psychological, psychiatric learning problems as well. We have them. They are there. And we can and we should be spending more time and resources with early identification and intervention. Because statistics are telling us that, in fact, I have an article here that I wanted to just mention, is that this is an article on suicide. Following 2-year decline, suicide rates rose again in 2021. This was a New York Times article a couple of weeks ago. So listen to this, a 2-year decline in yearly suicides ended in 2021, as suicide rates rose among the younger Americans and people of color, according to a CDC report. So what we're seeing, despite all of the devices and social media, we're seeing some really, really frightening things going on with our younger population. And this is where it is the most logical thing, and the schools are the most logical place. We really, really seriously put more and more resources into the schools so that we will be able to, as early on as possible, first grade, second grade, we don't need to wait until high school to be able to identify and intervene with high risk students. So what do you think about all of this? And again, looking at the divorce rates again, 48% of first marriages end in divorce, 67% of second marriages end in divorce, and I don't want to totally depress you today, and 73% of third marriages also end in a divorce court. So I like to talk a lot about, lessons to be learned. What are we going to learn, if anything, about the reality of what is going on in the world of relationships? And I know that we can't do this, on our own. But if you're finding that you're not in a good place, if you're finding that you don't know the ingredients, and obviously you, for the most part, probably haven't read my book, Today is a new day, as my late father, Morris Sayre, used to say. We have an opportunity every day, because tomorrow and yesterday is gone, to be able to do it better. What lessons have we learned? And I'm hoping that if any of you are in a relationship and you're not quite sure how it's going, or hopefully it's going well, but if it's not going well, my question, of course, to you is, what are you going to do about it? Because even though we can't change our history, I was doing some writing over the weekend. Let's seriously consider the wisdom of the Serenity Prayer, the prayer that's used at Alcoholics Anonymous. And I want to read this to you, because it really, I've known about this prayer, I've cited this prayer for years and years and years, but it really resonated with me. And I hope it resonates with you. If you're having issues of any kind, whether we're talking about psychiatric issues or physical issues or financial issues, and we know this, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. We cannot change history. We cannot change anybody else. But the courage to change the things that I can. And basically, it boils down to what can I do? What can I change? How can I modify things? And the wisdom to know the difference. So grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. I can't change my family of origin. I can't change my parents. I can't change what happened 30 seconds ago. And the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. You know, really, really powerful words that that I hope that we're all going to seriously take in. And finally, I want to remind you of something, and that is that we do not need to navigate life's challenges on our own. And I know that it is difficult, and I know that it is also expensive to be reaching out and looking for help. And I know that even in my own private practice, and I don't know how many of you have reached out, therapists have told you that they have outlandish fees that are just, you know, beyond something that you would be able to afford. I have always, over all of these years, been willing to adjust the fees. If people are serious, if they have the courage, because it takes a lot of courage to reach out and ask for help. And for somebody like myself in the helping profession, I should then, and I do, and I have, and I always will, be willing to make some serious adjustments in my fees. And many, many patients who I see, they know that I do, and I have, and I will make some serious, serious adjustments in my fees. So again, don't be afraid to ask. You have to wonder too, if you're asking for somebody, you know, from somebody, you know, can they adjust the fee? And if the person is so adamant that the money is a lot more important than the quality of counseling and trying to really help you, do you really want to work with somebody like that? I know that I wouldn't want that at all. I would want somebody who would say, listen, I'm willing, I'm respectful of the fact that you've asked, and to work out some kind of a plan. So every single week, of course, I ask you, how are you doing? How are you doing? And I want to know. I mean, are you okay with the quality of your life and relationships? I mean, generally speaking, nobody is thrilled every single day. But you feel that you're on a pretty good path, that you are not struggling with debilitating depression, anxiety, substance abuse, or other psychiatric or psychological kinds of issues. And, you know, I hope, because I've been doing this show now for 10 years, and I've hosted many, many SBD call-in counseling radio talk shows on other networks. You know, I hope that every single week that there really is something that I've said, some little thing that will, you know, perhaps make you pause and say, okay, today is the day that I am finally going to be ready and willing to tackle the depression, the relationship problems, other psychiatric problems, the substance abuse. And again, what about What about your relationships? They are so pivotal to our lives. I mean, healthy relationships are so pivotal to our lives, and unhealthy relationships will play havoc with our lives. So, you know, I ask you every week to really consider the people who you have in your life. And do you have people who you really care about and people who really care about you and who you can depend on when things are tough? It is so easy when everything is great. You know, people want to be around you and it's fun and we can go for dinner, we can go for walks. But it's when things get tough, then you really, really find out who your friends are. So in looking at your relationships with, if you have a significant other or children, family, are they largely positive? I mean, are they largely positive? And you need to be very, very honest with yourself. And if the relationships are not generally positive, my question, of course, is, and you know, you've been listening to me for all these years, you know, what are you going to do about it? Are you willing to have some tough discussions with people and say, look, things are not going well. I don't feel that my needs are being met in this relationships and having, I mean, that's really the first step, is being willing to engage with someone and have an honest conversation about what is and about what is not going on in your relationship. And I mean, I have tried very, very hard in my life to have a zero toxicity policy. I don't want any, not a little bit, because a little bit of poison is still poison. I've tried very, very hard to eliminate all toxicity. And sometimes, especially if you're dealing with family, it becomes very, very challenging. But I love this quote, and this is a reminder. It's a reminder for all of us, for me, for you, for all of us, to say no to the things, the people, and places that steal our joy. A reminder to say no to the things, the people, and places that steal our joy. Because it then becomes not so much about what these people are doing or not doing to us. It then really becomes, what are we enabling? What are we allowing? What are we even encouraging, inadvertently encouraging in our relationships when we are engaged and engaging with people who have virtually nothing to give or who at worst are really destructive forces in our life? And I know it's not easy. It's really, really not easy. And, you know, you have friends and there are issues. I'm hoping that you are not just going to turn the other way. You know, I'm going to share a personal story, actually, that happened to me a few years ago. I met this woman on the tennis courts, and we were both from Montreal and we both liked tennis, and I was hoping that it was going to be a really, really nice relationship. It was like, really, you know, a fellow Montrealer, you know, how wonderful, who enjoyed a lot of the things that I enjoyed. And as I started to get to know her, I began to see how critical she was of me. You know how these people, they always have to say something that is critical. You know, they may try to neutralize it with a compliment, but it comes across as critical. And I remember saying to my husband, Jim, that this is not feeling very good. And I surprised myself because I stayed in this relationship definitely too long. too long being probably a year, because not every time was a bad time. That was the thing about being on a roller coaster ride with this woman, never quite knowing whether or not it was going to be good, whether or not it was going to be fun, whether we'd be able to play tennis and have a really good time afterwards, or whether or not she was going to start with her criticisms. Finally, it just became too much for me. And I will not forget the day we had played some tennis and we got off the courts, and I said to her, listen, there's something that I really not, you know, need to talk with you about. And she was very smart, very, very intelligent in all kinds of ways. And I remember her expression. It was like, oh, I'm in trouble. And it was like, yes, not so much you're in trouble, but I don't want to engage. I don't want this, in quotes, friendship, because it was too crazy making for me. And I had to say that the criticism was something that I waited way, way too long to really address. The first time she started, I should have definitely said, look, I really don't appreciate what you're saying. I think if I remember correctly, she had criticized something that I was wearing. I mean, really crazy stuff. But I let it go. And so often we let things go. And that is the dance. That is the dance that we dance that keeps the dance going, whether or not it's in dating relationships, whether or not it's in business relationships or in friendships. We have a very, very, very important part to play in terms of what are we going to allow, what are we going to encourage, what are we going to enable that is not in our best interest. And that's something that I routinely talk about on the show, and also with patients, that we are mindful, that we are really mindful as we go through our days, that we are truly behaving in ways that are in our best interest. I know that Gary Null talks a lot about this. For example, this is a little detour, but if we're talking about, you know, living in ways that are in our best interest, it includes eating things that are good for us. You know, he talks a lot about the importance of plant-based diets and fruits and vegetables and grains and fish and nuts and herbs and supplements. And these are things that are important. So it's not just the foods that we eat. It's the people who we allow into our lives we need to routinely, and I do this a lot, ask myself the question, is this good for me? Is this, whatever this is, whether it's food, whether it's people, is this good for me? And I need to be honest with myself if I am finding that I am moving along a path, whether it's in the media or personally or even professionally, that is not in my best interest, and that I may be engaging in some self-destructive kinds of behavior. And these are the kinds of things that I really, really encourage you to think about. Because if we're looking at, you know, living our lives in ways that are in our best interest, I mean, they have to include eating healthily and interacting. I mean, the importance of social connections, sleeping 8 hours a night, taking naps, exercising, weight training, yoga, meditation, massage, acupuncture, even taking a bath to just relax, to unplug from all of the devices and just unplug from the world. And of course, having supportive people in our life, and including eliminating the toxins and the toxic people that make us crazy, and that sometimes means friends and family. Again, other little things that really do make a difference, you know, positive visualization and dancing and listening to music and getting out into nature. You know, this morning when I was walking to the tennis courts, it was just so beautiful. We live on Riverside Drive in New York City on the Hudson River, and everything looked so beautiful, and the trees and the flowers were blossoming. And I just felt so good, just walking into nature. It had a wonderful positive effect on my mood. And what about, you know, herbal teas, aromatherapy, you know, other things, helping others? And I think that, you know, we can get so focused on ourselves that we forget, you know, that in helping others, we get back, I think, a thousandfold. I mean, I look at all of the thousands and thousands of people that I've helped over the years. I mean, it has made my life so much richer, and it has been such a privilege that all of these thousands of people have allowed me into their life, have allowed me into their most vulnerable lives and secrets. And in the giving, it has given me a great deal. So think about that. Think about if you're having a tough time, maybe it's the giving back that will make a really big positive difference in your life. Volunteering. There are so many people out there, seniors and kids, that could really, really be able to benefit from somebody like you, perhaps, or somebody like me, who would be giving a real personal face-to-face, hopefully you wouldn't be doing it on the computer, gift that would enrich somebody else's life. Because it is in the giving, we do get back so much. So again, as we're going through our days, it is important, whether we're talking about relationships or we're talking about our physical health, to really try to find a balance, between work and fun and family, and also time alone. I'm someone that needs a lot of time alone just to be quiet, because I'm constantly talking, whether it's on the phone or on the show or with patients. So it's about trying to find our own center. And none of this is going to be easy. And oftentimes it's going to be very, very difficult. And this is why, you know, over and over again, you know, for all of these years, I've tried to encourage all of you to realize that we do not need to navigate life's stressors and the ups and downs and the good and the bad and the ugly on our own. So that even though, and I'm acknowledging that it's always a challenge to be able to try to find a therapist, a counselor that you can really connect with. Even if you've had some bad experiences, there are a lot of people out there who I suspect that you would be able to connect with. So again, you don't need to do all of this on your own. And, you know, you realize, of course, that May is Mental Health Awareness Month. And this is why I've spent basically the entire show talking about mental health. And I think that it shouldn't just be once a year that we're talking about mental health. We should be talking about mental health, you know, every single day. And I think that more and more people really are. I know that when I was a child growing up in Winnipeg, nobody ever talked about therapy or counseling or psychiatric disorders. And I think it's a good thing in the media that there is more and more and more discussion about the importance of our mental health. So again, without going, on and on and on about this, if your mental health is really causing you a lot of pain, and if you are finding that the sun and the exercise and the eating well, that those things are really not doing the trick for you, I hope that at least today I have convinced you to give yourself permission to reach out and ask for help. And you can always contact me. All you have to do is go to my website, which is beatyco.com. And you can always reach me through the Progressive Radio Network. And initially, when Gary Nell and I had talked about my doing the Ask Beatie show here on the Progressive Radio Network, the idea was that this show was actually going to be a call-in counseling show, because every single radio show that I've done in the past has been a call-in show. And for some reason, whether or not it was the computer, I'm not exactly sure why, but this show has not typically turned into the call-in counseling show to date that we had hoped it was going to be. However, next week, if you are going to be listening to the show, and I hope you put the 3 o'clock Eastern Standard Time in your appointment book, because I really hope and relish that you listen to the show every single week. You can call me. So even though it hasn't happened in the past, we can't change our history. But next week will be a new week. And if you want to, you can always call me during the show at 888-874-4888. Well, the time has come and gone, and I want to leave you with my two weekly messages. The first, of course, I've been saying this over and over and over today, is to give yourself permission to love yourself and to live your life as best as you can in ways that are in your best interest. So ask yourself over and over again, is this good for me? And I hope and encourage you to stay on that good for me path. And secondly, of course, we all need to continue to do a much, 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 much better job in learning to love each other despite our racial differences, cultural differences, religious differences. We can come together in ways that we have yet to do. I have a lot of optimism about the human condition. So goodbye, everybody. We'll talk with you next week. Have a very, very good rest of the day, and take care. Bye-bye.